Good afternoon, ANAE members, and welcome to the ANAE Learning Series webinar. My name is Anna McCormick, and I'm the product manager for ANAE. Before we get started, I just have two announcements. We love to make these as interactive as we possibly can, so feel free to submit any questions that you have to us via the Zoom chat window at the bottom of your control panel, and we'll address those questions to Ryan at the end of the webinar. We also have a great lineup of webinars for the remaining part of 2021 that you can register for on the ANAE website. Our next call will be with Mary Beth Lang at Kaiser Permanente on June 22nd. So keep an eye out for registration from me via email in the next week or two. And now I would like to introduce you to Maria Haynes, partner of Healthcare Links. Thanks so much for being here with us, Maria.
Thank you, Anna. I'm honored to fill in for John today and very excited for our talk with a very special guest. But first, a very special thank you to Anna and John and the entire ANAE team for continuing to offer these webinars and giving all of us an opportunity to stay engaged during these unusual times. Today, I have the pleasure to talk to Ryan Koos, Chief Supply Chain Officer for Sharp Healthcare. Ryan has lived and worked on both coasts in his young career and has settled at one of the top-rated healthcare systems in the country. You may know Ryan from his days at Oregon Health Sciences before he flew east to Memorial Sloan Kettering and then back west to San Diego with his current position at Sharp. What you may not know about Ryan is that he is a master grass seed producer. Growing up in one of the largest grass seed farms in Oregon, Ryan can boast that his family business was chosen to seed the master's course in Augusta, Georgia over 30 years ago. So if your golf course needs reseeding or your chia pet is in need of some new hair, Ryan is your guy. Ryan, welcome and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you all.
We recognize you have a full plate and appreciate everything you and your team are doing to support the front line and really grateful for your sharing some of your time with us today. To start, Ryan, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about Sharp Healthcare, and what led you to your current position?
Sure. Thank you all for having me on. Again, Ryan Koos, Chief Supply Chain Officer here in beautiful San Diego, California. And I'll just give you a little bit of a background of how I landed here from coast to coast. Early on in my career, when I was actually back in college, I've always been interested in the human body and science in general. And I actually started to go to school. I wanted to be a surgeon as my long-term career path. And to be honest, I couldn't stomach being in the OR and, would turn green and queasy. And so I ended up going the business route. I'm still very interested in science and the human body, as I mentioned, and landed a great first job at Oregon Health Science University within supply chain there in Portland, Oregon. And I've stuck with supply chain for close to 17 years now. I've had multiple positions and various operational positions, strategic positions, leadership and management positions. And I actually started as my first job was a buyer for the ORs and the laboratory, moved on to become value analysis program manager and leader for a couple different organizations, as well as a manager of sourcing and contracting. Here in San Diego, I was director of supply chain for the entire system and organization, and now I am chief supply chain officer. And so I've only really lived and breathed supply chain, and it's exciting, fast moving. I'm excited to be here to try and answer any questions you all have. And a little bit about Sharp Healthcare. So Sharp, as I mentioned, it's not-for-profit here in San Diego, California. And we have about 20,000 employees. We're a four acute care hospitals. We have three specialty hospitals as well. We have about 3,000 physicians. And then we actually have our own health plan, which is makes us a little bit unique in the market here. As far as supply chain goes here at Sharp and what I oversee and manage about $1 billion of spend that goes through our system. So hopefully that gives you a high level view of my past and where I'm at now and Sharp Healthcare in general.
Thank you. That's funny that you said you were pre-med wanting to be a surgeon in your undergraduate days. I remember undergraduate Michigan, I also wanted to be, I was pre-med and wanted to be a neurosurgeon, but it was actually organic chemistry that knocked me out of the running. Couldn't handle it beyond that. So I do want to remind all of the attendees that are listening to the call today that if you are signed in on the WebEx, there is a chat box on the Zoom control that if you have any questions that you would like me to ask of Ryan, please feel free to type those into the chat box and I will do my best to include those in our conversation today. So let's move on a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about your supply chain department and how it's organized, maybe touching a little bit because with your background in value analysis and what you're doing there.
Sure, no problem. So within supply chain here at Sharp, I have about 200 to 250 employees that report up to myself. I mentioned the four acute care hospitals, and then we have a corporate office that I sit in with staff as well. And so I have directors at each of our of supply chain at each of our hospitals that report up to myself, including our clinics. We have about 25 clinics, Sharp Reese Steele, that are a part of our Sharp system. And I should have mentioned that earlier and I missed that point. So they're an important part of our system. The clinics all report up to me as well from a supply chain aspect. And then in our corporate office here, we have an entire operations team that deals with the day-to-day and the nitty-gritty of the operations. And then we actually have a full strategic sourcing and contracting department, which might make us a little unique to other IDNs as well. I was fortunate enough to be able to set this department up and get us ahead from a sourcing and data integrity, cost savings, et cetera. It's something that the organization has needed for a number of years. And we have had a sourcing and contracting department up and running for about 5 years now and have been very successful. The ROI has definitely paid off there. And so value analysis is a piece of my group as well. And we have a full value analysis program with about six different committees. The service lines of orthopedics and cardiology are a part of value analysis as well. We have general surgery or peri-op. We've got a med surge, which tackles a lot of the nursing supplies. And then we have some clinical engineering facilities, purchase services, type group, kind of a more of a little catch-all non-medical group that we get together on. And all of the product flow, service flow, anything new and shiny that our clinicians want to see, touch, feel, purchase, has to be vetted through our value analysis process. And we've got a pretty strong process at this point. If we run into issues through our vetting process or it, you know, we've got a product that's going to compete with, you know, let's say a contract where we've got a 80 or 90% compliance, we have governance structures to feed these types of discussions up another level to leadership level throughout the organization at the system level that I sit on as well. And that's where, you know, the CNOs will get involved, CEOs, possibly our COO. It usually doesn't make it that far. But we do have a leadership level of governance that helps us in some of the tougher discussions or decisions. And so in a nutshell, we've got a tight program. And we've got a lot of data behind our program as well. That's one piece I'm really big on, and you'll probably hear me mention it a few times in this next hour, is that data drives all of these decisions we make. I have always told my staff that we're not the clinical decision makers. We're here to guide the process and to supply the data and to supply the clinical data and the financials and inform folks of the decisions that are being made and what will happen if you make one decision or another, et cetera. And that's our role in our RFPs, RFIs, RFQs as well. So hope that touches on a lot of the points you were looking for.
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting that you have, you know, the Sharp Steely with your clinics and obviously close relationships with your physicians. I know Sharp, just on an aside, when I was looking, also has a kind of a mentoring and educational program for nursing that you guys actually recruit and mentor nursing staff. So It sounds like that mixed with your, you know, obviously the data and business side of supply chain has really given you a very clinically driven supply chain process from what you've talked about. That's kind of unique.
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
So what do you think is most unique about your healthcare system?
Yeah, so there's a couple different things I could probably touch on here. You know, one, I mentioned the Sharp Health Plan. So we have a health plan that's been around for a while now and really, you know, helped us float to the top as an organization, you know, south of LA as a hospital system for a multitude of obvious reasons. That's one unique piece in our local market, I would say. And then from a national market aspect, we are always in the top three for most births west of the Mississippi. Our Sharp Mary Birch Women's and Children's Hospital, which is right next to our Memorial Hospital, our biggest acute care hospital, has always been at the top for number of births west of the Mississippi. So that's pretty unique, I think. And so we get to get into some unique programs and discussions around products, and our usage is usually way more than most folks, and we're probably setting the benchmarks on pricing in some areas for the country. So that's a unique piece. And then I think one of the big, you know, why I was very interested in coming on board at Sharp, and what interested me is, and you can Google this, you can look it up. It's known, people have heard about it. Suppliers ask me all the time what it means. And so it's something called the Sharp Experience. And so the Sharp Experience was created about almost exactly 20 years ago. It started in 2001. And it's a couple different things. So it's essentially like our care philosophy. So not just treating people, it's treating people, not just treating patients, and transforming the healthcare experience for our entire community. And so the journey started in 2001, and a group of folks came together through the organization and said, we want to, you know, make Sharp the best place to work, practice medicine, and receive care. And so that's really the heart of the Sharp Experience. And together, all 20,000 employees, along with the community, have, you know, really dedicated the Sharp Experience to create an advanced and personal experience for the community, ourselves, our family, and the people of San Diego. And so, you know, I encourage you to look it up. There's, you know, there's commercials that it's mentioned. It's, you know, on the internet. A lot of times suppliers ask me about it. They'll come into our hospitals, ask questions. People help people. And it really is a different place. I've felt it myself. And that's something that all of us as Sharp employees and physicians are striving for is that Sharp Experience, quote unquote. So that's pretty unique.
Yeah, I saw the tagline that says not for profit, for people. And I thought that was a very driving piece. But of course, you always think about the patient-centered care before it was a tagline, but also, like you said, including not just the patient, but everybody who touches the system, from the community to the employees. What a great, and it's obviously reflective in the awards that Sharp has received. When I looked at just awards from 2020, I mean, it's amazing the amount of best places to work, best IT, best physician, best experience. I mean, just that you guys have done very well on living the line, not just tagging it. So it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me jump a little bit on how your relationships in the industry are. Can you describe your current GPO relationship and if you participate in any like regional aggregation groups or executive peer networks?
Sure. So Sharp, we do not do a secondary GPO relationship. We only have a primary. Our primary is Vizient. And they've, you know, Vizient and Sharp, it's really been a true, you know, partnerships thrown around a lot, I think, in the industry, to be honest. And I think it really truly is a partnership and what is meant in a partnership. And so we've been a partner with Vizient for a number of years. I mean, back before when they were MedAssets several years ago, and now Vizient. We do not play in a secondary relationship. We are not actually a part of a regional aggregation group for supplies. Our pharmaceuticals pharmacy portion of spend is a part of the Mountain State Network regional aggregation group. But for supplies, services, et cetera, we do not participate in a regional group. So the as far as executive peer networks or any other networking, et cetera, I'm actually a part of a Vizient Strategic Supply Chain Council. And we have a number of folks within our organization that participate in councils that are solely around specific product lines, such as cardiology, implants, et cetera. And so, you know, we get to be at the table there and have great discussions that are outside the box and forward thinking. And what do we think is coming next? And what are our thoughts about the next 10 or 20 years, and where does supply chain need to go, and where do we need to embed ourselves, and what do we need to look out for? And so it's an exciting relationship. It's a great relationship. You know, just recently, I'll give an example, is in the state of California, there's a supplier diversity bill that was passed in 2019 that goes live on July 1st. And we just in the last 2 weeks received the templates and all of the information from OshPod in the state of California to supply a ton of data on supplier diversity. And we weren't expecting we would have to have a full complete report by July. Well, Vizient was looking out, you know, for their membership and actually has some programs that can capture and diagnose all of our supplier diversity spend, all the way down to is this supplier in our city, in San Diego, or in the state of California? What diversification do they have? What are your opportunities, et cetera? And so that's just an example of something that is not just price of widget, but a service and data-driven service that really helps their providers that we're going to take a part of. So,
okay. Just from the group that is on the phone, when you talk about the diversity initiative that's being passed through California, is that just California-based suppliers, or do national diversity companies count towards that aggregate?
Yeah, so we have to report on all suppliers nationally through the different levels of diversification. And then there's a percent that they look at. It's not set. They haven't set a percent. They haven't asked us for it. But we do have to carve out and report solely for the state and our region here in San Diego. And that's the data that's really hard to get to, and how they are addressing that, or how the bill is written. And you guys can look this up. I don't have the bill number in front of me. If you Google it, will come right up. But it's essentially 51% of the workforce for that supplier would have to be in California or in San Diego to qualify as to qualify for reporting purposes for the bill as a supplier that is diverse in California. And that information is very tough to get to. And you may have a company that's in California, but their workforce is all over the country or the world. So how does that look? And those are a lot of the questions I've been asking, and they're kind of filling their way through it right now. And, they're actually asking us for feedback. The same thing happened with the PPE bill that went into place, and there's two different bills, January and April. The state of California had two PPE bills that was put on us right in the middle of the war, of the pandemic, and there was a little bit of grayness there too, but we helped chime in and guide them to how that could be reported and how much inventory we could stock. So we're working through it now. I am not close to having my submission done. Hopefully we'll have it done in the next month, month and a half. So it's new for me too.
Sure, lots of new stuff. You talked about the GPO relationship. What about your distribution partner?
Yeah, so our we have a primary distributor. We do not do a secondary, similar to the GPO, where we only have a primary. And our primary distributor is Medline. Have a great relationship with Medline as well, here locally and nationally. You know, we really had to partner and come together and be transparent through the pandemic as supplies are sourced with Medline throughout the world and China in particular. And so there was a lot of discussions and tough discussions like everyone else had and all the other suppliers had with their partners. But, you know, it's a trust. Trust and transparent relationship. That's something that I asked for, you know, when we awarded Medline as our distribution partner just less than 5 years ago, about 4 years ago. We were with Owens & Minor prior to that for several years, and we were at a point where we needed to test the market and take a look at the business unit, essentially. And so that's a it's been a great partnership. It's been very transparent, which is, you know, the first thing I asked for. And so, yeah, it's been good and going well.
Great. So kind of in that line, you talked about the partnerships and what you've had to go through with the pandemic. What would you say has been the most crucial impact of the pandemic on Sharp Hospital when it comes to supply chain and any key takeaways that you wanted to share?
Yeah, it's a big question. And I've got a lot of different, you know, ideas and feedback there. But, you know, some of the big points that were glaring through when the pandemic started, and we were able to not obtain the PPE or the allocation of PPE that we needed. And it wasn't just PPE, this went on to plastics and respiratory tubing. And I mean, tons of it had a downstream effect. I think we had about at one point 300 unique SKUs that we could not get that we usually would use every day. And so what we did and what I had to do from the beginning is we stopped everything and we went out and looked up those, you know, 200 suppliers, and we backtracked to find out where all of their raw materials come from, essentially. And then where is their final product produced, distributed, and shipped out of? And we created, and then we had to do this in like a week at the beginning. And so we created our own matrix to say where we thought the troubles were going to start coming more and more, how long they would last, which suppliers we needed to get into the office immediately to talk to. But all in all, that's, you know, that was a big piece. That what came out of that, what was glaring, is that supply chain and healthcare has never had to look at raw materials. We kind of got a slap in the face there and the reality of the rest of the sourcing world outside of healthcare. You know, they look at raw materials. That's manufacturer sourcing. Is it an integrated manufacturer? Do they own the raw materials? Do they own the final product as well? So that's changed the game for myself and for my team and for Sharp, is that, you know, when we go and look at awarding suppliers now in our RFPs and when we're going out to bid, a key component of our scoring is if the supplier owns the raw material manufacturing and the final product. If not, where is the raw material coming from? How diverse is the raw material relationship between the supplier and the raw material manufacturer, as well as where is it being distributed from? You know, is it national? Is it coming from China, Honduras, Spain, et cetera? And so we're really digging into the full integrated portfolio or network of raw materials to final product now. I think the other piece of feedback that goes hand in hand there is, you know, we're constantly dealing with back orders. And I mean, I don't remember dealing with this many when I was a buyer for the OR. It just seems like anymore, there's more and more recalls, there's more and more back orders. And those are conversations we have daily with our key supply partners and distributors. And, you know, we're hoping it gets better. There's been a turn in some areas that's getting better, you know, knock on wood, but really it's being transparent about your manufacturing, your raw materials. Me being able to have as a IDN or a supply chain leader, I need to have insight into your production, into your manufacturing, et cetera. And then once I have insight into that, we need to have some KPIs and deliverables and performance metrics in our agreement so that we don't get into these situations that we're in now and that we dealt with for the last year and a half. So that was a lot, and I could go on. This could be a whole hour topic in itself, but the dynamic in the game has changed for us in what we look for. We don't just look for cost anymore. At least we don't at Sharp. We're looking at, you know, being able to get the supply to our nursing staff, which essentially then goes down to the patient care. So we're all here for patient care. If I can't get the widget and I'm constantly having to change or convert because of back orders and recalls and shortages of raw materials, that's essentially affecting the clinic, could essentially affect the clinicians and patient care in the long run. So I can't tell you how many supplies and different SKUs we've had to go back and forth on still, even now, as we're, you know, the pandemic slowing down and supply is getting better. And the nurses, they're just getting burnt out on it. You know, I can't keep changing stuff on them and putting a different widget in their hands. So that was probably a lot, but it's a big topic right now.
Sure. This is actually coming in from the chat box. Ryan, are you responsible on the supply chain side for the pharmacy side? Because it's obviously another area that we saw in the pandemic for acquisition and raw materials.
Yeah, no. So from a vaccination standpoint, yes. I was part of the vaccine team that brought everything down here to Southern California. As far as the drugs, no. The drugs and pharmacy go up through Suzanne Shea. That's the one piece I do not cover, is the actual pharmaceutical drugs. Now, items like hemostatics that have an NDC code, saline solutions have an NDC code or a drug code, those all flow through me in supply chain. So, but the actual pharmaceutical drugs do not. That's a good question.
Okay, so it looks like your subject matter expert on that would be Suzanne for that question. Let me ask you on when we talk about supplier engagement in the last year, obviously as suppliers, it's been very difficult to connect with our provider supply chain personnel because you guys have had so much going on and kind of firefighting and also just the physical ability of coming over to your offices like we used to. How do you see supplier engagement now and how it may change? I mean, I don't see it probably going back to where it was before, but where do you see that kind of landing? And do you see yourself working with more or less suppliers with standardization? And much like you talked about some of the manufacturing, far shore, near shore, onshore type of stuff. Can you give me a little thought on that?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I think there's a little bit of an unknown, but I'll give my take on it and what I've seen so far. So right now, today, I'm actually in the office. I'm in my actual office in my building. I myself haven't been in my office every day. My staff has not been in the office for probably 3 months. And I think what's probably going to happen, if it's not already happening across the country, supply chain's never been really in healthcare one to work remote, or actually in general for supply chain to work remote or at home and not be in an office. We've always been in an office every day. That's just the way it's been. I think we've proven that we can still get everything done not being in the office. I think a lot of organizations are facing this T in the road right now of, do we do we really need to keep all this office space? And these high dollar leases, you look in, you know, I used to work in New York City. I'm curious what's going to happen in Manhattan, you know, and it's commercial real estate. But that's something we're looking at Sharp right now and trying to digest is, you know, do we really, you know, can we lessen our carbon footprint? That's a big one for us. And that's, you know, that is a way we can do it is moving to a remote type work setup. And so that's something we're actually reviewing now. And I think there's going to be a lot of organizations that will go that route across the country. I've heard of several already going that route. For the supplier, that doesn't make it easy for the supplier. So I understand, get the question. I think, you know, everything we've had to do now has been virtual. It's worked. There are times that a face-to-face, especially in very big discussions, strategic discussions, negotiations, you need to sit down with folks. And that's something we're going to continue to do at Sharp. I just don't think every single supplier meeting and meet and greet, I don't think it's going to be in person anymore, to be honest. I think it's going to be tough to go back. And so we're in this, I referenced earlier, this T in the road, I think. I have an idea of how it's going to work for Sharp. I think we are going to lessen our carbon footprint, at least here in supply chain. And, you know, we've done a really good job. We're in the middle of implementing the biggest project we've done in 20 years. We're leaving Lawson and going to Workday for an ERP. Full Big Bang goes live January 1st. Workday has never done a virtual implementation. We have not seen them in person yet. We did through the RFP over the last couple of years, but for the implementation, we've not met in person once. And we have been working on this for 14 months now, pretty bad timing with the pandemic, but for the size of the project, and we're on schedule to go live January 1st. So we've proven we can make it work virtually, I guess, from an operations standpoint. So that it's a tough question. You know, I think it's going to be regional. I think it's going to be, you know, what's the cost in the market for that commercial real estate and for those leases, et cetera. I'm hearing more and more. I don't think people are going to come back to the office in certain segments of the business. So we'll see. I wish I had the crystal ball there, though, so, but I don't.
From a contracting perspective, do you see yourselves working with more suppliers to diversify the actual supply chain from where product is coming from, or do you see more standardization?
Yeah, so it's going to continue to be standardization, and then it's going to continue to be not just standardization, but transparency into if this supplier and manufacturer owns the raw material production and the final product. That's the key. And I kind of went through that a little bit earlier, but you know, we're not looking to de-standardize. We're looking to have better transparency into the global sourcing efforts of our suppliers.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
And the other piece that, you know, we had to make some tough decisions. I did early on in the pandemic, and you know, the hot topic was SMS, the material that's in your gowns, your face mask, your N95s, et cetera, and had to make some tough decisions on, you know, where do we want that product coming from? And we actually pulled product out of China with some of our key suppliers and made changes and moved them to the Americas, so that I didn't have to deal with the ports, the Chinese New Year anymore, and just not knowing if my product's going to make it here at this point. I mean, the ports are still a mess now. And that really helped us. My product shows up on time. I have plenty of it. I have hundreds of days on hand of critical PPE, and I have for several months, and I moved product closer to the United States. And that's something we look at as well, is the product manufactured in the US now, or is it in the Americas, you know, South America? Those are big points to us. And we may pay an extra, you know, a few cents on the dollar, or some are more expensive than that. But that's something we've got to weigh, is the risk of not receiving that product that we have a commitment to and a good price on, and or paying a little bit of a premium to have it here with, you know, within a day of shipment. So those are some key changes we've made in some critical supply areas. And there were tough decisions because no one, again, had the crystal ball there to say, hey, what's going to happen with China and manufacturing and raw materials and et cetera. So that's feedback I've given my key distributor and other key suppliers as well.
Right. I think that pretty much answers that question about the secrets to the success of your best and most collaborative partnerships are going to be these that provide more transparency and information to you from where the product is going down their full
supply. Right, right. You know, and another piece of that is just from, you know, the technology roadmap of suppliers, and a lot of information suppliers can't give out, they don't want public, but, you know, having an understanding of suppliers' technology and where it may be going the next few years, you know, advancing, et cetera. And then where do those advancements come from globally? And that's another piece of that we look at. It hasn't been at the top of our list, obviously, as we're coming out of this pandemic, knock on wood, hopefully, but that's another piece of it as well.
Okay. And you've talked about price, obviously, not being the major determinant anymore. We've gotten beyond the price of the widget to, you know, value and acquisition and all the, those quality. We talked a lot about the benchmarking and having true clinical white paper documents that prove the quality and all those things. Going back from like more of a cost piece, is there any feelings, I mean, from, well, actually two question piece. One is from like rebates from a financial standpoint, when you are looking at growth and spend as opportunities for a total cost piece. And then also from talking a little bit more about the white paper documentation. I know most suppliers struggle a little bit on how do you do an unfunded white document, you know, white paper document when you don't have anyone who's willing to try the product, and then kind of in that piece. So how can we provide that type of information to you? And from a financial standpoint, where do you feel about rebates and growth in business for a package?
Yeah, sure. No, that's a great question, a great couple questions. So I'll talk to the rebates maybe first. We do accept and have, you know, rebates in our system and as part of our agreements. You know, I'll always say, and my staff will, that they want the price at the pump. I understand why the rebates exist. It hides the benchmark of the price at the pump. Or it's a way to wrap product categories together and award the IDN or the supply chain group that is negotiating the contract. So I understand why they exist, and they do count to our bottom line. They affect our bottom line, and so they're good. They're good if you can't get the price at the pump down any further. And so I understand why they exist. I get the methodology and the negotiation tactic there. I think where they've really helped is when you can align as a supplier multiple product categories and divisions, or a IDN is close to having, let's say you've got five product divisions and the IDN has four of the five covered, has been a partner with you for several years, and there's that fifth division you've always wanted. Well, that's where I think the rebate and coming in with creative wrap type scenarios can help push the needle with the IDN and the hospital system in looking at trialing or bringing on a new product from that division that you haven't had. I think it will make you more competitive against your competitors. So that's where I've seen success with it. You know, for the hospital, then it means, you know, I've got a lot of different supplies now I got to keep an eye on. I can't let anything else in through the door through VA. And we have a good way to track that and make sure it doesn't hurt our compliance. So that's where then the hospital has all the work to make sure that we're complying with it, the wrap agreement, to get the money back in the end. And so does that help answer your question there around rebates? I hope it does.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we are getting a couple more questions, and I do want to let the people know that are putting questions in, that if we don't get to these, I will make sure Anna runs these by Ryan and gets a response back to you on those. I do have two more questions that are more general piece to kind of get a feel for what SHARP is doing that we had talked about. One is technology. Obviously, SHARP has been awarded best places to work in IT. They've been most wired hospital networks. So technology is a big piece of SHARP. You talked about the data side of that. What are your thoughts on the impact of technology as we move from the acute care to the remote patient care setting, and anything that SHARP may be doing from the supply chain side?
Yeah, that's a great question. There is a big shift right now, and we are looking at that shift and trying to align ourselves strategically as well. And from a technology aspect, as far as if supply chain goes, and I should have mentioned this earlier, and I had a bullet point to bring it up, and I just missed it, is that I mentioned data-driven decision-making, SHARP-wide on the clinical, the operations, the supply side. We always have every type of dashboard report. We're getting into AI technology right now, and I mentioned Workday. There's a huge AI functionality with Workday that we do not have now, to where I could talk to my computer and say, where are my Ethicon electrosurgical generators on PO number 1234? And within a half second, it's going to tell me where it is and how many are coming in, et cetera. You don't even have to touch the keyboard. So, yeah, pretty fascinating stuff that's happening right now in the AI world, and it is coming into supply chain and already has. We're actually testing some of it right now and looking at that functionality to drive efficiencies and money out of our operations. And so that's just something that's always been hard to do, and technology, I think, is going to help solve cost and handoffs and manual work within our operations. And that's something that we definitely are going to become involved in. And I read an article the other day as we were reviewing technology that said the next 10 years of technology and AI work and robotic work is going to equal about the last 50 years of technology advancement. So it's going to move five times as fast is what we're hearing and reading. And so technology is going to be where it's at. You know, we want to drive, it's going to drive efficiency, it's going to help us make decisions faster, quicker, and we're just going to be more educated. So I'm a big believer in it, and it can move as fast as it wants because it's only going to help us. So hope right. That answers some of it.
I remember when we were talking, this is going to be our final question, Ryan, just so I can respect the time that you gave us today, but you had mentioned that during even today you see 200 back orders a day, and that was, you know, that was part of the conversation around transparency. So if I was going to ask you to look at what your focus of supply chain is today versus 1 year and 5 years from now, kind of looking into a crystal ball, like you said, would be, I'm asking you to do the impossible. How do you see healthcare supply chain in the future? Where do you see the differences coming outside of just the technology component?
Yeah, great question. So the back orders, the operations piece I talked to a little bit, but I think really where supply chain and where we're going, and I know others are that are thinking like SHARP, other supply chains, is that, you know, everyone's used to us negotiating a price or doing a contract and then the conversion. And yeah, we run value analysis, but I think in order to really get supply chain a seat at the table, we've got to be able to talk to clinical outcomes, clinical data, surgical site infections, and we need to have a seat at the table for those clinical discussions and be able to provide data and feedback that's realistic to help us better our patient outcomes, our infections, et cetera. And so as an organization, we actually all of the leaders within our organizations, from managers, directors, up to VPs, we all have a common like 7 or 8 goals that are all around surgical site infection, CLABSI, et cetera, you name it. There's about 10 of them. And so we are all judged and rated and appraised on those types of clinical related outcome data. Me, myself, and supply chain is. And so I think that's a huge piece that I think that's where it's going is, you know, supply chain has got to get a seat at the table for and be able to present more of the clinical type data. There's a revenue piece to that as well that we play in. And in our decision making is, you know, the widget may be a dollar more, widget A may be a dollar more than widget B. And the physicians want widget A, but it may have a 10 time reimbursement rate. So those are things that we get involved in now. And I think we're going to become more involved over the next 5 years in that, especially as reimbursement rates are not going higher, they're going lower. So.
Exactly. Well, Ryan, we have hit the time mark on our conversation. Like you said, I could talk for hours. You have so much depth and information that I would love to pick your brain on. So much for your time today. Really was very informative.
Not a problem at all. Thank you for having me on. And, you know, if there's any other follow-up questions, let me know and I would be happy to answer them for you all.
Thank you. There were a couple of questions that I've asked Anna to forward up to and get back to those who had asked for it. So at this point, thank you everyone for listening. Anna, I will turn it back over to you.
Thank you so much, Maria and Ryan. That was an awesome conversation, very informative. We always appreciate your time. ANAE members, thank you all for listening in and keep an eye out for our next webinar invite with Mary Beth Lang at Kaiser. Have a great day. Thank you.